Hello and welcome to The Reading Revolution. I'm your host, Josh Gregory. We've got a great set of guests coming up for you today. They are an award-winning author and illustrator duo, creators of the popular Pinochle Jones children's book series, and they are parents, they are creatives, they are professors. They're the Wright Kellys. That's coming up. The Reading Revolution starts now. Are you ready to embark on an adventure through the world of words? Join us on The Reading Revolution, and let's explore the exciting world of literacy together. Rebecca and Kevin, thank you so much for being on The Reading Revolution.
Hi, sure. Thanks for having us.
So before we get into your work with children's books, can you give us a little idea of your backgrounds? Where were you coming from before you came up with the idea of writing a series of children's books?
Wow, that's a long story. We'll try to be short. Too long didn't read, but we worked in Texas in design and advertising, and I think that's when you started writing children's book.
It was. It's been a couple of decades. But I originally started. It was funny because I actually had a box of my dad's things, and I came across a story that he'd written. He was an English professor, mm-hmm. And he had actually written a children's story. And I was like, well, this is really interesting. I never knew this that he did this, and it would be really fun to kind of take that and kind of build on it. So I actually I looked through it. I kind of changed a few things, and I illustrated it, and actually came up with the first one that we did,
which led to the brain book. It was a story about this kid's brain that is bored, so it goes on these adventures without him. It's really funny.
It's an out-of-body experience.
And that started our love of just kind of reliving. We were both book lovers when we were children. We were talking about my dad was in the military, and when he would travel, he wouldn't bring chocolate or toys from wherever he was. He always brought me a book, and I couldn't wait to get my hand on that book. So we've always been just large consumers of children's books. And I think we always just kind of knew it was going to happen at some point, even though we didn't really talk about it. It was meant to be.
Just always been like there, in addition to all the other stuff that we do.
We do lots of stuff.
It's the fun part. We get to go back and actually have fun with this, and kind of for us, but also, you know, hopefully for a wider audience as well.
And how much does your background play into, you know, what you do for a living, go into the ideas that you're going to be putting down on pen and paper for kids?
It's really truly as if we calculated that, but it was serendipitous for sure. We're both designers, so we love this graphic form. We love this idea of storytelling. It's innate in what we do in design. Plus this idea of, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I have a background in illustration as well. Mm-hmm. So I've always really been, that's my favorite thing is illustration. So visual storytelling has always been a part of what I do. And growing up, I was a huge fan of comic books. Mm-hmm. So that was a big influence on kind of where I went.
Illustration. And then fold in teaching. Loved being a designer. My favorite part of that job was actually working with the interns and the younger people. So we decided to go back and go into education. And then we started learning about just really not only our own paths, but the influence that education can have on somebody from the get-go. Like that is just, it's really, really impressive, this literacy development and how young and how powerful that can be from the beginning. So we kind of merged all those things together.
Say from infancy to 5 years old is like the critical time to, and build literacy for children. So
think about that. Yeah. If you're not reading books to somebody in that time period,
that's a loss.
So that all kind of came into play with what type of age range, the type of book we wanted to create, those types of things. So we kind of pulled it all together.
We would read to her stomach when she was pregnant. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've talked to a couple of different organizations and leaders in the science of reading, actually another group that's out kind of your way in New York State, the Reading League. And, these experts have told us over and over that it starts at that, even those infancy stages, pre-infancy, to read to your child while still in the womb, and then continue that from the minute that they are out and breathing. It really does make a difference. That's incredible. And the way that you're doing it, with the literature that you're creating, you're actually just extending on all these things that we would think most people probably understand, but a lot of people don't.
Right. The communication of the importance on that, I think, is something. I mean, I know there's organizations that definitely talk about this, but getting that into common knowledge, I think, is an opportunity that needs to be sort of addressed, right? So that it becomes common knowledge. Feed the baby, clean the baby, change the baby, read to the baby. Like, it should be this part of the growing up process.
Especially now when it's so easy just to jump on your phone and like,
or the tablet.
Skip the whole process of like communicating and connecting with your child. And it's such a huge temptation just to kind of take the easy way. Spend all your time. Yeah, it is.
You're exhausted, it's part of the process for sure.
And I think there is something interesting. I mean, it was always that way with myself when I was growing up. I grew up in a family of avid readers, and my mother was an educator. That, yes, there was always TV, and there is screen time right now. But I think even kids today still pick up a book, and whether it's a picture book or a chapter book, they understand the difference. I think they really do, and they realize that they can lose themselves in a book the same way that they can with a TV show or something that they might be watching on their phone or their tablet. But I think they also make the distinction that it's a very different experience and one that they find enjoyable as long as it's presented to them as being an enjoyable task.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's one of our mandates is we try to approach a new book with the intention of making it fun. Like, the first thing, it's got to be enjoyable. It's got to be entertaining and engaging for the audience. Sorry.
And I know what you're going to say. He's going to take away my line. Sorry. He thinks he did it. It's entertaining, engaging first, and education is kind of hidden in there, almost like hiding your vegetables
in your mac and cheese.
Like, we're giving you the good stuff, but there's also this added benefit. So, so that's kind of where we like to focus it. Yes, it's great. Let it be engaging first. They love the characters. And by the way, you learned something.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, the horror. No, that's a wonderful way to put the two together. So folks who are playing at home right now, they can go to thewrightkellys.com and take a look at the books you have. And the author name, where did P. Knuckle Jones come from? What was the genesis of the name of this character?
Okay, am I starting? No, you do.
And then I'll.
It's an absolutely true story. I know it sounds corny, whatever.
Super weird.
It's weird, but I actually literally had a dream where I saw these books on a bookshelf, but they weren't exactly like what we ended up with. Right. It was P. Knuckle was in the books in this dream, and he was the detective, and he was kind of like a bumbling detective that would just stumble onto the solution like by accident. And it'd be like this kind of crazy, just almost like our Seymour Wartz character.
Yeah.
Now he has all these like weird connections. He reasons it out, but it makes really kind of no sense. But it always works out in the end. So I saw them, and the illustration style was this, which is a different style than I'd ever worked with before. And I had a very like strong memory of this, which, you know, it's weird to remember.
He doesn't remember anything, so vividly. But he did. He was like, woke up telling me the detail, like it was real life. It was really kind of interesting.
Yeah. So we took that kind of beginning. That's the genesis. And then we decided to change it up a little bit. So.
Well, and then, you know, we're always trying to talk to the kids about like, why do you have P. Knuckle Jones? Like, why aren't you using Kevin and Rebecca? And he solved it for me. I should have paid him for this tagline. He goes, it's just a way cooler name than Kevin and Rebecca Kelly. And I was like, wow, that's genius. Like, okay. He'll probably come back and try to get money for that. But I think we made him sign a waiver. I don't know.
Well, you know, I'm thinking back to my youth and Encyclopedia Brown.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the character's real name was, but it's like Encyclopedia sounds way much cooler when you're a kid. And Pinocchio Jones obviously fits the same bill in the same kind of genre.
To all these, you know, part of our, not tentpoles, but sort of our foundation for writing books is engaging with writers' communities and things like that. And there was a post I was following the other day, and they were like, what were your top three books? And I think we had four, and every one of ours was every one of those writers' books. It was Encyclopedia Brown,
Hardy Boys,
mm-hmm. Nancy Drew, and R.L. Stein. Those, I was like, these are my people. They get it. did we say Scooby-Doo?
That, well, not a book, but
not a book, but
still detective.
Yeah. Yep.
Kid detectives.
Yep, the original skeptic paranormal investigators, Scooby-Doo.
Exactly. Yes.
Ruining the idea of ghosts from 1967 until today. Yes.
That's so funny. Which made me the skeptic.
I love the first three quarters of the show, and then when they revealed it, I'm like, man, I wanted it to be like a real.
We all did. We wanted it to be the spaceman or whatever, but it was always. Exactly. Some guy with a mask. It just ruined it for all of us. So what kind of adventures does P-Knuckle go on for those who are not familiar that are interested in checking out the book?
He is so bizarre. And in his bio, so we like to change up his bio. He's a real person to us.
Yeah.
We almost like to think of him as... he's in the witness protection because you don't really know his background. He wears the hat and he's trying to be incognito, but I was talking to somebody yesterday and they were reading his bio and it changes all the time. So this particular bio, he's a classically trained lunch lady, right? Which is so bizarre. And he's a llama farmer.
Sometimes he makes hot air balloons for eccentric millionaires.
Yes. So he just is living.
Every bio is different from book to book.
He's just living this life. I don't know. He's who we would want to be when we grow up.
He's a man of mystery. Yeah. Yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say you've just completed the latest version of, you know, the adventures of P-Knuckle Jones. But let's go back to the beginning. What was it like as author illustrator, the tandem that you are? What was it like knowing that you've got a children's book published that you worked on together?
It's the best feeling. It's hard to explain because when you see it, like we self-published our first book, which was back in 2011, I think. And it was based on the town that we lived in was all about Halloween and pumpkin carving and all this stuff. So we wrote a book that actually kind of explained book. The forgotten, the forgotten tale of the first pumpkin carving called Scooped. And so we developed this character, and when we, you know, it was not cheap to self-publish, but when we got the boxes back, we're like, oh my gosh, this is real. And it's the best thing in the world. A cool hardback, you know, like legitimate book. It was a big hit in the town, and we sell it at festivals and things, but it led to
us actually, you know, getting published is a whole podcast by itself. It could be like a year long podcast.
Yeah.
But what it did, it sort of broke the rules of getting an agent and getting a publisher, which is great because a lot of times they don't like to see the work finalized and finished. And then you don't go through the editing process necessarily like you do when you and work with your team of people. But we did. And what was really cool about that moment, I just remember we did the book tour with the kids and there was this young woman, beautiful, probably junior in high school. And she came up to us and she goes, I remember you. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. And she goes, you read to my elementary school and you're the reason I'm going into English lit. And I was like, are you? So that was that local touch that the self-published book did. But then to get something national.
To have it
another level.
When you get a call and then, you know, Penguin is interested in your new series. That's such a, I mean, and it's an amazing feeling. And then, And it just builds and builds, you know, working with the editors and working with, you know, back and forth, getting revisions and stuff. It's like, you don't even care about how many revisions there are because it's an honor and a privilege to be working through this process. And you know, it's going to come out even better.
And to see these professionals that do that almost become a part of our baby. So the books are our children, right? And we don't want to hear that our children are ugly or whatever, you know, they own a piece of the final product as well in terms of caring and sort of pivoting and revisions and things like that. So it's a really cool experience when you get with people that are in it to just make it the best possible product.
Yeah.
The founder and CEO of our company just recently published his first children's book that he's been working on for years. And the man that's sitting in the room right now with me, one of our content creators, David Gagan, helped with the editing of the book and has a much different look at it than I do. But when I look at a children's book, and it's probably just my ignorance, you look at it and you go, oh, you could rip that off in you know, in 6 months or that kind of thing. And now I see these guys working on it and going, man, this takes a long time. I think that is, you know, just, I'm like the average man who thinks, yeah, no big deal. You can rip that off in no time flat. Talk a little bit about that process. It doesn't happen overnight, does it?
It's, no. It's 32 pages. You know, 32 pages, you think it's like no big deal. I have a stack of revisions, text revisions and art revisions that is like, it's worse than
700 words.
Yeah.
And for us, even though because we're designers and we're very, very used to revisions, it still was harder to do the children's book than it was to write an academic paper.
Mm-hmm.
It's less revision, for sure.
And it's a
it's dedication.
It's a solid year of back and forth. I think they dedicate a year for the illustration. Mm-hmm. So you've got to have it written, go through that process. And then, you know, you do storyboarding and then the tighter sketches and
character study,
layouts, character sketches. And so all of that has to come into play. And we're actually working on one for someone local who's doing who's doing his own children's book, which is going to lead to a whole
nonprofit
charity. Yeah,
really cool.
Right. Whole, you know, big project. So we're kind of going to explain to him the process as well. I don't think he's quite aware of that.
He thinks it's going to be an easy journey. And so I just sent him an email. I said, I think we need to sit down and talk about the timeline and the process and sort of the stages of writing a children's book. So yeah, he doesn't know what's coming, but it's fun. Yeah. And it's your baby and you're passionate about it.
If you got paid hourly to do this, nobody would ever do it. So you've got to really care and really, you know, want to see it can be the best that it could possibly be. So it's a labor of love for sure. Yeah.
And not to belabor, you know, our topic of publishing right now, but are there pluses and minuses to doing it on your own and self-publishing versus having to work with a much larger, you know, conglomerate that's going to be involving a lot more people?
Yeah. There are for sure. Absolutely. You have that freedom. If you're doing it yourself, you have nobody breathing down your neck. Nobody's like telling you to, you know, start from scratch.
Change it, change your title, change your colors. Don't like the layout. Don't like, but you got to be your own.
You did that to me, but.
Well,
we worked it out.
We did work it out because I'm an art director and he's a designer and he gets upset when I walk behind him and he's like, I'm not done yet. But what if you, and he's like, I'm not done, but you get that freedom, which is fabulous. Mm-hmm. And any money you make, that is you, right? But you also have to pay for that up front. You know, there's the balance of that.
And there's the amount of noise that you have to break through because there are so many books, self-published and professionally published books. There's so many to have to work your way through and kind of rise above. And
add AI books challenge now into this conversation. Yeah. So, you know, it's complex. And the downside of doing self-publish also is you feel like it's up to you to learn to how to go through this. And so there's people to help. There's really great people that are out there to help you. There's a lot of people out there looking to take advantage of you as well. Mm-hmm. So your learning curve, I think, is much greater when you self-publish versus, you know, somebody sort of taking that under their wing. But with that, you know, you've got the commitment of working with the editors and lots of revisions and
which we found was actually a positive because, you know, then you have somebody, you know, who's a third party. It's not as close to it kind of giving you their
outside feedback. Yeah.
Yeah. So we thought that was good.
So there's good and bad. I guess it depends on what your objectives are, maybe.
I have to agree. And as a PR person, writing press release or copy that, you know, in some instances where I work now, a couple of people have to look at it and they've got their ideas, and agencies and other places that I've worked that 75 people had to look at it and make their changes and all that kind of thing. So I totally understand, you know, both of the different ways that you guys have approached this. And obviously this is working for you to great success. I'd like to bring up something a little bit different that I talked to before we actually started the podcast, and it's a section of your website that's geared towards librarians and teachers that jumps into something you have kind of brought up earlier in our talk here about not only the interesting and fun side of reading, but how to go about sharing how to teach it. Talk a little bit about the snippets and curriculum and lesson plans that you guys have put together that you're sharing freely with anyone who's interested at therightkellys.com.
No, yeah, that was sort of a natural path for us. I think just being in education, it just took us a while to understand that. And we have actually worked with truly amazing network of friends that work in education, K through six education, and just tremendous librarians and media specialists that understand how to extend the learning so that it's not just a story, but it's bigger than that. So it extends the opportunities for learning. So we, you know, had, so for example, I have a friend from high school. She's retired kindergarten K through six teacher. And I was like, Carol, would you mind, you know, just looking through this? Let me know what you think. We'd like to hear opinions early on in the process. And she took longer than normal. And I was like, oh my gosh, she must hate the story, right? I think she's afraid to tell me that she doesn't like the story. So she said, can we chat instead of an email? And I was like, oh boy, I'm in trouble. She actually went on to say that she was so excited about the learning opportunities in this book that it kept waking her up at 3 a.m. and she would write curriculum for it. This with the book, I could do this. And I said, could you, you know, being the designer UX UI, and I'm interested in understanding who my target is, you know, diving deeper into that conversation. And she said, well, just so you know, like teachers do that curriculum development outside of school. Mm-hmm. So in addition to everything else that these teachers are doing to guide our children and learn everything they're supposed to learn, they're outside of school creating lesson plans for these books in order to extend that. So then we talked with another librarian, and she was like, this is a great opportunity to do those things for those teachers. So why wouldn't we want to help the people fall in love with not just our book, but to make their lives easier and increase literacy development in children, right? Because we need these kids to not just love learning, but the social, the cognitive, and the educational components of it, right?
Yeah,
it had to be.
It was really eye-opening because when we went to do our presentation, they had been reading the book for a week before that, our first one. Mm-hmm. And they'd actually worked it lessons into their lesson plans into the classroom. And they have a fab lab, a maker space, where they were building like little models of ways to trap the monster, like, and things like
that. Other like ways, really, how else could you solve it using STEM and building and things like this? So I felt like when we walked in, they knew more background and more information about the characters than we did.
Yeah, they'd really.
So it was really sort of mind blowing to walk into a place that cared so much. And then the conversations to really understand that there's a need for this kind of thing. It's a win-win.
And really. If we can help teachers and librarians, we actually dedicated our second book to teachers and librarians, because they do so much and are underappreciated for it. That, you know, it's anything we could do to help out. And if we can give them some idea starters, lesson starters, that they don't have to be up until 3 a.m. trying to come up with, then that, you know, that's the least we can do. So
have you heard of any other authors or author duos doing this sort of thing? Or is this kind of like the first of your kind?
Yeah, there's another.
And I think your friend actually said there were a couple of other books that she knew of that had actually came with this kind of material.
Of her 30 years, she said there were 3 or 4 books.
Very few.
So there were very few. And I think there's one other couple that really dives deep into this. I know they offer curriculum. I don't know how deep they go into it, but they're always working for organizations and things like that. So maybe we'll meet them one day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what a great way to work with not only a friend, but a colleague and get their expertise. So it doesn't come off as, hey, we're just winging it. We think this is a good idea. There's some sound curriculum and sound educational thought and leadership put into that.
Yes, for sure. Like, I don't want to put anything out there that a teacher would be like, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, using our network and people that I trust that are dedicated to this, I think getting their stamp of approval, it just really makes it feel really more truthful or verified or valid or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you see, let's go back to P. Knuckle Jones. Do you see P. Knuckle as being someone who is going to be that timeless Encyclopedia Brown that never seems to grow up, and you can have book after book. Have you ever thought of kind of expanding that into young adult literature and even beyond?
You know, it's funny. The main character Finder she's a second grade tree frog. And so she is the one that she's got all these plans, and she's this initiative that she's starting her own detective agency with her friends. And we were actually, where was that? Something mentioned that she grows along with her audience. So we were thinking that would be an interesting idea, like you just said, to have her kind of, kind of mature a little bit and go through elementary school and with the kids that are reading her. And who knows? I mean, I don't know if
I don't know, but the idea of Pinochle kind of branching off, and he's got so much unknown to him that who knows where this guy's going to go. We don't know, but it's going to be interesting for sure.
See, I think one of our heroes, R.L. Stine, does books for these different age groups, and he, with the same level, age appropriate level of kind of intensity and horror and creepiness, and it's really cool how he's been able to translate that into these different age groups, and we've been fans. Goosebumps for the little
kids. We made our children watch them. So we still watch them every year.
It applies to adults as well.
And what a great way to kind of grow up in your literature experiences, where you start with this character and maybe see it go all the way, all the way through their lifespan as well. It's kind of like, the Hardy Boys, where that they're perennially 18 and 17, but it seems like in some of the books, they are maybe a little bit older, a little bit more mature. And you kind of have that experience as a kid growing up with those characters.
I love the idea of the Hardy Boys as old men doing them still detective.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's great.
Who knows? You put it out there for us. So
we have to write that one.
Now we got
to
write it.
So what we were talking about, the curriculum, and I know it's fairly new to your website. Have you known, or has there been any testing with teachers who have taken that curriculum and put it into use in a classroom?
Good question.
We will have
your dissertation.
We've actually, now that it's just kind of launched, we're sending it. The publisher wanted to take a look at it. They've got a library division as well, so they're passing it through their library division, which we're waiting to hear back their feedback. But they said it was okay enough to go ahead and post on our site, and if they had any kind of feedback on it, that we could always update it. But I think so far it's gotten a good response.
So far, but we are definitely interested in the impact of this. Again, being the nerdy professors that we are, is this theoretical? Can we actually track a difference? Could we do a long-term study of kids that grew up, with these experiences? I think having that data behind it would be really, really beneficial to, hopefully librarians and teachers and
this whole idea
to us. So that's TBD, I think. Yeah. But we're definitely taking little steps in terms of verification, like taking theory into practice,
The first packet that we put together is only for our first book, and we're starting the planning stages for the second packet to kind of go right along with Finder's creatures too.
And it sounds like a smart way to approach it too, to not just go, hey, we're going all in on this and this is just going to be what it is. It sounds like the approach that you're taking is a little bit more methodical, and we're going to see what works here, what can be revised, and what we're going to do moving forward, and then probably revisiting that whole process on each book that you work on.
Revisions, right? These critique and feedback. That's another thing that we try to bring it into the classroom, but also in our books, is this idea of failure and not being afraid of failure, but really learning and being able to assess and pivot when necessary. So we can't just say that to our students. We've got to live that way too, right? It's not fun to go back, but the insights we're going to gain are going to be so much more useful. Like if this is not helpful to them, why would I offer that to them, right?
And like you said before, it's learning isn't just cognitive. It's also the social and emotional aspects of it as well. So we tried to incorporate that kind of thing, into the story as well, with the characters being very individual characters with their different, their different
personalities,
pros and cons, and, and fears and, strengths and weaknesses. So we're hoping that the readers will relate to all these different kinds of emotions and the different kinds of situations that these characters face and how they deal with it.
I'm really interested to know what you're doing and what it's like now that you have these books and you've got a new one coming out. How the promotion of, or how the process of promotion works. What are you doing to get the word out? How does that work in the publishing world?
Well, we've learned we've had a big lesson in this between our first and second books. We realize that it's super critical to be on social media, and be out there.
And our agent and publishers are, they're doing their things. They have the things that work, like their press releases, their contacts and things like that. But there's, in today's world, there's so much more to that than just, a press release, and they can't do it. They rely on us, and we should have been developing the story because people, this is what they tell us. I'm not saying I believe it 100%, but what they love is also us and the way we work together and just sort of that weird process.
Because we assumed that the books would speak for themselves and they just don't. You have to be out there speaking nonstop for these books and just kind of getting them in front of people and explaining, our process and everything and letting them know who we are so that, it's more real and tangible.
Like how do we develop stories? How do we come up with ideas? Like there are people that are interested in that. I think that we are just the dullest people out there, but our friends say, no, you're super weird. So you should talk about that. So we are in the process of a deep dive into social media and learning what platforms are best for what. Instagram is good for mom groups. Threads is great for author groups. LinkedIn is for professional contacts in terms of educators, librarians, media specialists, and things like that. So it's a learning process. We're learning. Yeah.
So speaking of social media, where can we find the Right Kellys?
Oh, yeah.
First is what we have.
We are on TikTok, the Right Kellys. We are on Instagram. We are on Threads, and we are on
Facebook.
And then we have the rightkellys.com, which is kind of, that's got kind of an overview, and that's where the teaching materials are, maybe a bio.
There should be links to all of our socials on that too.
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about managing all of this? Now, you're not just the folks who are coming up with the idea for these books, but now you're social media. Now you're doing promotion. Now you're doing lesson plans, all these kinds of things. How do you manage all this as the team that you are?
Seems well, doing the lion's share of it. No, but we also have, nobody can do this on their own.
No.
You can't.
We have finally figured out that so our background as art directors is we control everything. Well, he struggles with it more as the graphic designer. He likes to do all of it himself. I tend to like hire somebody else to do the photography. So we are learning to rely on people that are experts.
Mm-hmm.
We are just so fortunate to have friends and meeting new people in the Syracuse area that are really just so, so excited about helping us. And they've been really generous with their time. So we'll pay them back for that. Like, I had a friend of a friend on LinkedIn. He's a content manager strategist. And I believe that people should not necessarily, I'm not going to ask you for that because this is what you do for a living. Mm-hmm. So just be kind in saying to somebody, thank you so much for that. What can I do for you? It comes back to you tenfold. And this guy was he's like, here's five steps you can do right away. I'm happy to do that because you were so considerate to me. And I'm blown away by people's willingness to kind of help spread the word.
Yeah. Being courteous goes a long way for sure. And knowing that, that being humble about it, knowing what you don't know and knowing
to admit what you don't know
is that, I think that goes a long way.
I mean, I'm fully going to admit I am not good at this and it feels like the blind leading the blind, but we are making mistakes and we're trying to show who we really are. And hopefully that engages with the people that we want to fall in love with our books.
And letting them know we're serious. This is what we love to do. And we want to continue doing it. So,
It sounds like, any other success story in business where you surround yourself with the right people You give that autonomy with some control. And then the sky is the limit when, as you mentioned, just being humble and being, you know, approaching it with humility and saying, we want this to work and we might not know how to do it, but together we can work on it as long as the experts are going to be put into place.
And we're totally willing to do our part to help, you know, pay back if, you know, if anybody asks us for a favor, we're right there for
them. So. I have a friend that he's the master of social media helping us, and I owe him a whole design of a book. It's just fine. That's what I do. And that's what I'm good at. And he's really good at that. So, you know, whatever he needs, we're going to do it.
It's the book. Yeah, for sure.
So I have to ask, you know, if your partners in literacy, what's it like being partners in life and literacy at the same time?
Oh my God, it's the best. We've been friends probably, 31 years now?
Yeah, I think it helps that we were friends first.
Yeah.
So I really respect him as a designer and not just my partner in life. But we tend to work fairly well together.
90% of the time, smooth sailing.
And then?
Every now and then, we have different ideas about things. And then I finally realized, okay, this is my epiphany. It's better to love your wife than your idea. So ideas can come and go. I want my wife to stay.
Yeah.
So, so, you know, it's about respect and listening to each other and kind of, you know, explaining yourself.
Sometimes we miss that. I think what we have figured out is that we're both creatives, right? And creatives have very strong opinions about the vision of what this thing to be is, perhaps like storyline or character flaws or whatever it is. Like, we see it in our mind one way that may not align. But I think what we figured out when we have a disagreement, like if there's a major change in a plot, that I will need time to think about that. Like, I'm not on board with this right away. And I might express that a little too knee jerky. So we've learned to throw it out there and give me moments. And he's the same way. Yeah. We need time to kind of really step back, take the emotion out of it, kind of, okay, play what if is what we call it. What if we did do it this way? What is the strength and weakness? So we have the emotion, you know, we're both hot-blooded Irish.
Understanding when people are stressed out is always good. It's stressful right now. Let's just kind of take a break.
You're going to need a moment and to just think about
breathe
it.
Breathe for a second. And, you know, talking about life in general, like outside of doing the books and work and everything, we love to do projects.
Yeah.
So we came to a point where it was just better. We just decided
that I'm right.
She has the ideas for the project and I figure out how to make it happen.
Yeah.
So.
That's our general.
The visionary. Yeah.
I go, I have an idea. He's always like, oh God. Oh God. He used to call me Lucy for Lucille Ball because we're going to do this thing and it's going to be wild.
The night before Thanksgiving and when Home Depot's closing. Yeah.
Yeah. I said, I need you to go to Home Depot the night before Thanksgiving and I need you to get a ton of supplies. Just buy whatever. Hooks, bolts, hinges, wood, plywood, nails, screws. He's like, what am I doing? I go, we're going to take out a closet and build a reading nook. He's like, I've got to make plans. I need to lay it out. I need to know how much wood. I'm like, no, buy everything. And I hear him calling me from Home Depot and they're announcing the store's closing in 10 minutes. He's like, what about? I go, just buy it. Just buy it. But that's my process. It works for me.
Yeah.
Him, it's a little more stressful, but it always works out.
It works out in the end, for sure. It turned out to be a great little nook. So
I was right. Yeah.
It's the yin and the yang, but you're working together, and that's all that makes, that's all that really matters at the end.
He's going to resist at first, and that's okay. So I let him do that.
It's the process. It's the dance.
What do your friends and colleagues think of this partnership with working on books and that sort of thing? It's obviously probably a little out of step from the way that they might be approaching life.
Yes, no, it's 100%. Like our best friends tried to do a project that we love to do, and they said they almost got a divorce over drywall. So, but I don't know. I think they just... You know,
everybody's got a different way of doing things. And I think I think they appreciate that we're able to do it, you know, most of the time. but they also think we're kind of crazy.
They do.
Just the process is
different. They do say, do you sleep? And we really, we just don't sleep.
We sleep like after everybody is asleep. we push our window of work is like shifted about 6 hours from normal.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I love the analogy of drywall. Not too long ago, my bride asked if we should wallpaper something in the home. And I remember growing up, my mother and father on a wallpaper project. And I said, I love you too much to ever even bother trying to do that. So we'll pass on the wallpaper. I'm not doing that. Not living it twice.
Yeah.
Wallpaper's a killer for sure.
And as designers, you might have better success, but I look at that and say, no way I'm going to be into that.
I mean, we'll try it and it looks good from far away, but don't look up close.
Yeah. We're simply taking it down versus putting it up.
Yeah.
So what's next for the Wright Kellys? Obviously, this new book is coming out. Talk a little bit about that. Talk a little bit about what you're doing to promote that. And anything else that you have on the horizon, we'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, let's see, what the book officially comes out July 2nd, but I don't, Tuesday, or I can just say the book is coming out this summer. Mm-hmm. We have a couple of local signings at the two Barnes and Nobles happening this summer.
In Syracuse, one in DeWitt, one in Clay.
We have a signing at the Hope Cafe. We're reaching out to all the wonderful independent bookstores here that are just so magical, and we try to feature them on our socials, and we just have these fabulous conversations with the people that are so passionate about books. So we're hoping to do events with them, and they do it not just in Syracuse, but the little charming villages that are all around us. We're falling in love. We're doing that. We're trying to do a big fall presentation in terms of workshops for the local schools around the area, and maybe some virtual workshops with the kids, which we'd love to do because they get to help us draw monsters, and they're so brilliant. These children, they're just mind blowing. And then we are working on, like we said, we're working with a partner who wants to use children's books to get children more engaged with the arts. So he's got this fabulous story, and he also is putting together a nonprofit. Hopefully you guys can see it soon. But his philosophy is to leave the world in a better place than it for his kids than it is now. So he's working on activities to do that.
Mainly
so.
Through arts, performing arts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's come up with a character.
Yeah.
And he's written the story, and we're going to help kind of flesh it out and
revise and
yes, and illustrate the characters and the scenes.
Kind of help him go through that self-publishing process.
So you mentioned a couple of places that people can find your books. For those that are not in the Syracuse or Central New York area, I can assume that it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any other places that you'd like to mention?
Yeah.
Target and Walmart. Target, Walmart, websites.
Books A Million, Pals. It's on Penguin has everybody housed on there with links. So you can always go find it at Penguin, but it's under P. Knuckle Jones, not the Wright Kellys.
And we also have our website.
And we also have links on our website and links to our previous books. Like the one I wanted to mention, if I can really quickly, because it was very focused on girls as hero and girls staying in STEM and STEAM fields. Through the research, we found another gap that girls, this happened to me, decide that they are not good in STEM fields very early. I want to say as early as potentially 4, but I'd have to check that stat, but it was surprisingly low. So we realized we needed to normalize girls as scientists in elementary schools, right? So we wrote a book called The Awesome, Impossible, Unstoppable Gadget. And the hero is this very soft voice female character who saves the day and is the hero. And she uses creative thinking, which helps STEM thinking. So that's one of my favorite books. And it's got lots of Easter eggs in there for kids and parents. So, you know, but again, that's where this making a story more than just a book, it's this long-term implication is what we're trying to do with these books. And they're all redheaded girls. So I love
like
them.
Our daughter.
Like our daughter.
One of the things that you mentioned, and I kind of want to take a minute to talk about, is the support of the independent bookseller. We've had a couple of folks on that have independent bookshops in the Oakland area in California and in St. Louis. How important is that to you to be supporting these folks who are, you know, not necessarily in direct competition with the Amazons of the world, but are certainly making a difference in the lives of their communities, or the folks in their communities with literacy? Talk a little bit about working with the independent sellers.
Yeah,
well, they've been amazing. We're starting to drive around the entire area, and we're, you know,
introducing ourselves. And just hearing their story, yeah, and their actual connection to the kids. So it's not just buy a book, but this girl over here, very soft-spoken, I think this child would really resonate with your book, and doing activities with them. It takes it again. We love all the places that support us, but giving it a face and a relationship behind the book, I think, is just so important. And the booksellers, I'm going to say, they're like just the most endearing, kind people out there. Their love in life is books and understanding those nuances and meeting the authors and understanding who would be good for this. Like, you can't find that online. I mean, you can, but it's not the same.
It's so personal, and they're so interested in supporting local authors, yeah, local businesses, and it's a mutual thing, because we will always promote their place as well. It's it's like it's a community for sure. Mm-hmm. That's one of our big pillars. community.
Well, it sounds like you've got a lot on your plate, but it sounds like it's a labor of love, and you're looking forward to all these things. I cannot thank you enough for being on the Reading Revolution. Tell us one more time where we can find you online.
We have therightkellys.com.
It's right with a W.
W-R-I-T-E. And Kelly with no E at the end. So we're the K-E-L-L-Y Kellys. So it's therightkellys.com. That name can also be found on Facebook. It is also on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads.
Awesome. Rebecca, Kevin, thank you so much for your time. This has been a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed yourselves with your time here on the Reading Revolution.
Yeah, Julie, that was so much fun. If you want to talk, let us know. We've got lots of more silly stories.
Awesome. Well, enjoy your summer. Enjoy the new book. And let's stay in touch, and we'll do this again.
Right, thank you so much. This was great.
Thanks.
For more information about the Reading Revolution, please visit bookvending.com. If you would like to contact us or would like to suggest a guest, drop us a line at readingrevolutionpod@gmail.com. The Reading Revolution is hosted by Josh Gregory, with technical direction from Thomas Crane and David Gagan. The podcast is produced by Jake Blumberg and Connor Russo. The executive producer is Jay Blumberg. Thanks again for watching and listening. We'll see you here again on The Reading Revolution, where literacy matters.